Right. There's an interview with Andy Galloway, 14th of October, Green and Blue Project. Okay, Andy.
Good morning.
What can you tell us about your service in the Fermanagh area and working with the Guards?
I joined the Royal Ulster Constabulary in August 1981, and my first station was Rosslea in Fermanagh, in southeast Fermanagh. Prior to being allocated that station, I didn't even know where Rosslea was. I'm a County Antrim man, so I knew very little of the geography of Fermanagh at that time. And so I arrived out to this place in the southeast corner of Fermanagh and found myself in a station that was literally a mile and a half from the border with County Monaghan. I found myself very quickly listening to Garda on a daily basis, because in those days, in our police stations and in our police cars, we had a thing called the X-ray radio set. The X-ray radios were designed specifically for, well, they were aerial-to-aerial radios, mm-hmm. and they were very short range, and they were ideal for the RUC and the Garda to communicate with each other. The radios were not recorded, so they were quite often used for ordering fish and chips or cigarettes or all sorts of other things, but it allowed us to have conversations with our colleagues directly across the border. And primarily they were used for vehicle checks, because the Garda would put their vehicle checks across to us and we would put ours across to them, so we could check vehicles on our own systems. Mm-hmm. And that was my first introduction, really, with interaction with an Garda Síochána. At that stage, I never met them, but most days I heard them talking and occasionally would talk to them via radio. Or alternatively, in every police station, we had a direct line to our corresponding Garda station. In Rosslea, our corresponding Garda station was Scotstown. Incidentally, it was many, many, many years later before I ever knew where Scotstown was, before I actually crossed the border and found it, and found that it was definitely a village, perhaps even smaller than Rosslea. But every station along the border would have had a direct line, a direct phone line, to their corresponding Garda station. Mm-hmm. So communications was good, but we rarely met.
Mm-hmm. And those other people have said to me that those radios were very short range, and indeed there was difficulties with them.
Yes, they were short range, and the difficulty would have been how far away the person you were talking to was. Mm-hmm. Ours worked quite well, and they worked quite well because we were really working in a very compact area. And even though we never met, and even though we were on the other side of a land boundary, we were constantly almost driving parallel to each other around the border. And so I think for us, we found the X-ray sets worked incredibly well. Now, if we had wanted in Rosslea to talk to Enniskillen on the X-ray set, it wouldn't have worked. And perhaps if the cars in Lisnisky had been up on high ground, we might have been able to reach them. But certainly for the vehicles just across the border, just within a 5 mile radius, mm-hmm. it worked really, really well. Mm-hmm. As a consequence, we stopped using the official radio net. Most of the time, the X-ray set was much more informal.
Right. And then you talked about ordering fish and chips and things. I mean, that was that ordering fish and chips across the border, or
no? it was typical for somebody, the station duty officer. It was typical for him to realise that he was running out of something like milk or cigarettes or something, and to call a car and say, "Could you bring me in 2 pints or something like that?" And it wasn't beer. He was talking about milk.
Yeah.
That was literally how that happened. That's the X-ray set was quite useful in that regard. You could Now, when I say order fish and chips, in Rosslea we never got an order for fish and chips because it so happened that had there been a fish and chip shop in Rosslea at the time, which there wasn't, it is unlikely that they would have served us because the circumstances of 1981 were, you have to realise that this is immediately following the period of the hunger strikes, and Bobby Sands had been the MP for Fermanagh South Tyrone when he died on hunger strike. Rosslea was an area where he had a significant amount of support. So you have to remember that all of the shops in Rosslea, bar one, refused to serve the police. So there only actually was one shop in the village where we could shop. It so happened.
So when did you first physically meet guards?
The first time I met a member of the Garda was just about 6-7 months after arriving in Rosslea, and the next police station along the border from us was Newton Butler. Newton Butler was perhaps 7-8 miles away, and all of the border stations had a system where we paired up with each other, and that meant that if we had to cover for each other, we were able to do so. For example, on this particular day in question, the night before, Newton Butler had had a function for somebody who was leaving the police station. So they went out the night before. We covered the late turn for them. And we also agreed to take any calls that they had on the following morning. And they would then start later on, perhaps around lunchtime. They would provide their own station duty officer, but we would take their calls. And generally speaking, you didn't get any calls. Crime was very, very low. And unless somebody had a road traffic accident, it was unlikely that you were going to get called out. However, on one particular morning, we did get a call from Newton Butler. And the call was that a local farmer reported having dead sheep in his land. And it was a case of sheep worrying by what he described as a stray dog. And the call was literally right on the border. It was literally in the land which goes right up to the dotted line at Clonus. Not on the main road from Newton Butler to Clonus, but on the back road. And we were asked, would we attend? And this was a little bit unusual for us in Rosslea because there was a significant difference between Newton Butler and Rosslea at that time. In Rosslea, we didn't drive anywhere in daylight. It was much, much, much too dangerous. Just 2 years before I arrived, two police officers had died in a fatal explosion just outside the village. So we didn't drive anywhere in daylight. In Newton Butler, oddly enough, which was only 5 miles away, they were still patrolling night and day in vehicles. So we did have to get across to Newton Butler, but we weren't able to drive in marked or in an obvious police vehicle. And we had a car that we kept for the purpose. It could have been an Audi, it could have been a Renault, it might even have been a Lada, for those who might remember those awful cars. And I can't remember what it was, but myself and a colleague, we put on civilian jackets over the top of our uniform, lifted our rifles, got all of our kit together, got into the car, and made our way across to Newton Butler by the back roads. At no stage, once we got out of the village, did we really stick to the main roads. Because our big concern, of course, was that this might have been an invitation for an attack on us. Although the station duty officer in Newton Butler knew the farmer concerned, and he was very confident that it was a genuine call. The other thing the station duty officer in Newton Butler did for us was he contacted the Garda in Clonus. He lifted the direct line to Clonus and he said, guys, we have sheep worrying at such and such a place, and is there any possibility you could give us a little bit of support? And this was normal practice. And so we anticipated that on arrival in the vicinity we would find a Garda vehicle as well. And off we drove with a map in our hand, a set of directions from Newton Butler as to how to get to where we were going, because neither of us really knew. And eventually, yes, we found ourselves at the scene and found a quite annoyed farmer. I think perhaps there was maybe two or three dead lambs in a field. and quite a sorry situation, because the rest of his flock, of course, was also quite distressed. Mm-hmm. And so we did what we do. We interviewed him. We took a statement. It didn't take all of that long. We looked around. We sympathised with him. And having left, having got all the details that we required, we decided we would go across to the bridge, which was the bridge over the river was literally the border at this point. And there was a member of the Garda who was leaning up against the bonnet of his car, watching us with quite a bemused smile on his face. So we took a walk across and introduced ourselves, being very careful, of course, to meet in the centre of the bridge, that we wouldn't contravene international sovereignty in any way, considering that myself and my colleague were both in uniform and carrying rifles and had handguns, and we thought, my goodness, if we step across the line, what'll happen? So we met, we shook hands, we had a conversation, as police officers across the world do when they get together. We talked about the job, we talked about all sorts of things as would happen, and we talked about the sheep worrying, and we said, well, it's a stray dog, and but we think the dog has came from your side of the border. And the guard smiled at us and he says, oh, it does, he says. Don't worry, I know all about the dog. I know where it's from. And we said, but how do you know where the dog's from? Well, he says, I just live up the road. And for me, this was amazing, because here was myself and a colleague, and we couldn't even think about living anywhere close to the border. And here we had went through all of these security precautions just to come to answer a sheep worrying call. And we were armed to the teeth, and we were anticipating at any moment that gunshots were going to break out and break the morning silence. And here was a guard, not armed, not accompanied by anybody, not concerned about anything in the whole world, and he lived literally just, you know, almost within spitting distance of the border. And that was my first encounter with a member of An Garda Síochána.
And was the dog?
We never heard what happened to the dog, as happens. And I, one of two things will have happened with the dog. The dog will have been sorted out properly, as in the guard will have went to the owner and the dog will have been put down.
Yes.
Or the guard will have went to the owner and the dog will have been chained up.
Yes.
Either way, it dealt with the sheep worrying, and we were able to close the file, I suppose.
Yeah. And the and whether the farmer got any compensation?
It is unlikely that, I'm guessing, I suppose, in those days he would have went through his own farm insurance or something like that.
Okay, so are there any other ones where you got to know guards?
Well, we, it so happened that as time went on, in the 1980s things changed dramatically, and that little window of opportunity where you were able to drive about by 1983, 1984, that was beginning to change. By 1985, I think, all of the border stations all became no-drive areas, and police officers went in for so many days at a time, and they were flown in and flown out, and that did have an impact. But the communications, certainly the radio communications, the telephone communications continued. And I know that other colleagues who I left the border at that stage, but I know that other colleagues did keep in regular contact with their corresponding numbers. I think probably the next time that I suppose the next interesting occasion that I had to meet the guard whilst still in the RUC was many years later. I remember in 1995, by that stage I was stationed in Enniskillen, and this was in the period post-ceasefire. So there was a fair amount of relaxation, and we were starting to experiment and do things that we hadn't done before. And I was going in one night for night duty. We started night duty at 11:45, so I was driving into Enniskillen down the Dublin Road, and I came across this big red road sign sitting at the side of the road, and it said, stop, Garda checkpoint. And I thought, that looks like it's not in the right place. which of course it wasn't. It was on the Lisbela side of Enniskillen. It was most definitely nowhere near the jurisdiction it should have been in. And it was quite obvious that somebody had lifted it on the southern side of the border for a bit of a prank and brought it with them and set it up nicely on the side of the road. So I went on into work. We paraded for duty. We were detailed our car crews, and I was in the second car crew that night driving it with a probationer. And I mentioned to my sergeant that what I had found on the road coming in, and I said, if you're happy enough, I'm going to go out and lift it, throw it in the boot and take it out to Black Lion. There was a method in my madness, because I knew that most of the time you were guaranteed to have a guard standing on the little mini roundabout at Black Lion. Mm-hmm. And if he wasn't standing there, he'd be in his guard room. And I was fairly convinced that there was a good opportunity here for a cup of tea. Mm-hmm. But it was also a Friday night, and what I hadn't anticipated was having lifted the road sign, put it into the boot of the car, and drove all the way out to Belcoo, and then slipped across into Black Lion, and we were in an armoured car. It was probably an armoured Ford Sierra. It wasn't marked in any way. It was, to everybody who's seen them on a daily basis, it obviously was a police car. But I had sort of hoped, yeah, we'll drive across, park at the front of the station, and nobody will notice. And what I hadn't anticipated was there was a crowd of people standing outside the pub opposite. Mm-hmm. So, of course, as soon as we got out of the vehicle and we were in uniform, the roars and the shouts and the jeers started. Yes, so we had to very quickly hand over the road sign, very quickly tell him the story of where we got it.
Yes.
And sadly, the cup of tea wasn't forthcoming. We had to very quickly disappear back towards Belcoo, mm-hmm. And get back into Northern Ireland jurisdiction again. Otherwise, I think our presence would have brought about an international incident that would have made the news. So we decided, discretion is a better part of valour. Mm-hmm. We thanked him and off we went.
Yeah. So, I mean, other stories I've heard is about, you know, socialising and et cetera between... So you weren't involved in any of them?
I wasn't involved because literally by that stage I had been in stations that were a little bit further removed from the border. Mm-hmm. So that daily interaction and operational interaction with the Garda had ceased, mm-hmm. I suppose. My interactions with Garda Síochána then became much more involved, but that was in the days of PSNI, mm-hmm. So which is, I suppose, outside the terms of the project.
Well, don't see why we couldn't.
Well, for example, in 1998 we had the Belfast Agreement, the Good Friday Agreement, mm-hmm. Which brought about the Patton Report into policing, which I think was something like 187 recommendations or something like that. It was, or 191. There was a lot of them anyway. And one of those particular recommendations was that there should be exchange visits between PSNI and Garda Síochána. Mm-hmm. And of course, it was one of those recommendations that nobody noticed. Mm-hmm. And in 2006, an email was circulated to all officers in PSNI to find out if anybody wished to take part in this particular scheme. And there was three areas of interest. One was drugs. Mm-hmm. I wasn't involved in drugs branch, so that wasn't going to happen. One was traffic policing, and I wasn't in traffic branch, so that wasn't going to happen. And the third was IT. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that I was one of those people that everybody came to with their IT problems. So mm-hmm. I thought, I could probably do that. Mm-hmm. So I applied, and... and I made a little bit of history because I went through, I became the first candidate on IT, and in January 2007, we made history, three of us, three constables. We were the first constables to do a joint visit to An Garda Síochána from the Police Service of Northern Ireland, and in reality we were the first three constables from the north to serve in Dublin since pre-partition. Right. Which wasn't, I suppose, as much of a deal to us at the time until we actually reflected on what we were doing. So as a consequence, I had the privilege of living in Dublin for two whole months. Mm-hmm. We were our accommodation was paid for by the by our home service. So we found a very nice hotel in Fleet Street in Temple Bar, and the three of us lived there quite happily for 9 whole weeks. And I have to say that I spent 9 weeks in Phoenix Park. I worked in their IT branch, which is actually quite big. I found myself in an office with a sergeant and 2 guards, all of whom were female. And their job was very much around publications. For that 9 weeks, I found myself proofreading reports. I actually proofread the previous year's Garda Commissioner's Report. And we found ourselves working on projects like that, which for me was a godsend. I learned a lot. I got involved in things like procurement, which in the PSNI was done up in police headquarters, and people like me would never have got an opportunity to be involved in it. In Garda headquarters, they assumed that I would know about these things, so and I didn't. But I learned, and what that did was that allowed me to make friends that I have maintained ever since. And there's people in the Garda who I have maintained contact with, and we email, we're in contact occasionally. Most recently, whenever I was unfortunate enough to be caught speeding by an Garda Síochána coming out of Dublin Airport, and so I had occasion to contact one of those friends to find out, do I need to send my driving license to Dublin or not?
Yes. But, so in terms of the relationship that existed, for instance, in Rosslea and Newton Butler, those stations, what was, I mean, was it colleague to colleague? Was it, what was the attitude to of the guards with inside the RUC, people who were on those?
We didn't know the guards. We could talk to them. We might even be aware of their names. You generally might have been aware of the name of the station sergeant. So we would have known who the station sergeant was in Scotstown. We would have known his name. We would have known nothing about him. Our attitude towards them were, they're police officers like we are. I know that there has been some political capital made about whether or not we trusted them or not. Trust never came into it. In fact, the reality was we did trust them because, for example, in my account where we had to go and investigate sheep wearing, we could control the environment on the northern side to the best of our ability, but whatever would happen across the border was out of our control. So we had to trust the Garda to provide us with the cover. And if the guards had said to us, guys, don't be going to that call, we wouldn't have went to it. So, as I say, there is some political capital has been made, and there's been some high-profile cases that have hit the news in recent years, and there's an ongoing commission. But nonetheless, we did have trust for those folks, and we've seen them as colleagues. Interestingly, it brings to memory another connection back to Rosslea that I experienced in 2006. In 2006, I was involved in a Peace 2 project as a police officer, delivering equality and diversity training to PSNI and in Garda Síochána. And I was a trainer on the scheme. On each particular course, we had 3 trainers, one guard, one PSNI officer, and one independent. And I did all my courses, I delivered all the training that I was involved in, were in hotels across the border. I did have the option of doing them in PSNI stations, but I knew that the class of scones in a hotel were much better than in the police stations. So there I was in Sligo, and I very well recall that particular first session where I was taking the first session and we got everybody to introduce themselves and to tell us where they were from and what stations they had been in. And I came across this gentleman who looked considerably older than me, but it transpired that he joined an Garda Síochána in 1981, the same year I joined the RUC. And his first station was Clonus and mine was in Rosslea. And even though Scotstown was our corresponding Garda station, Clonus was literally almost an identical distance. Mm-hmm. It was, as the crow flies, perhaps less than 5 miles away. Mm-hmm. Now, this guard obviously was in Clonus when I was in Rosslea. We would have been able to hear each other talking on our X-ray mm-hmm. radio sets. We perhaps may even have talked to each other on the radio. We didn't know each other. Mm-hmm. We didn't meet for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And 25 years later, I thought it was quite profound, quite touching, mm-hmm. almost emotional, that here was somebody that I had worked alongside in 1981, and we met and shook hands for the first time 25 years later. Mm-hmm. By that time, he was a sergeant in the traffic corps in Carrick-on-Shannon, and I was retiring. I was due to retire as a constable, so his career path obviously went a little bit better than mine. But it was interesting that 25 years went by before we actually met.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, is there anything further you'd want to...
No, I think we're good to go at that.
I think we're good to go at that. Okay. Good.
Okay.